Poverty mentality is a very insidious thing within the church. And essentially, if you have a poverty mentality, it's coming out of a mentality of slavery rather than sonship. And so that whole slavery mentality is to keep us from our inheritance as sons. So if we, it's like wandering around the wilderness and only having just enough for the day. And that's the principle that they had to live. And when they came out of the wilderness into the promised land, there were battles, but they had then to embrace a whole different lifestyle. And there was a journey from slavery to sonship. And just because they came out of Egypt did not mean that the mentality of Egypt came out of them straight away. Because in Egypt, they were slaves and they were told what to do. Even though they came out of Egypt with all the gold from Egypt that had been stolen effectively from their 400 years of slavery, they still thought like slaves. So they were looking for someone to tell them what to do. They were looking for Moses to tell them what to do. When it came to the invitation to come into the presence of God as sons, they sent Moses instead. And that mentality of slavery, it still is sort of propagated within the religious systems that set up mediators between us and God. And therefore, it's a major issue to deal with. And what the poverty mentality will say is, well, you're not worthy of anything. You're a slave, so why do you expect to be given anything? Why do you expect blessing? Why do you expect favor? Because you're a slave. You're just told what to do. And what it stops is it stops us engaging in an intimacy with God and in a relationship where we are joint heirs with Christ. And therefore, our inheritance is to inherit everything that sons have. And I think I did quite a lot of teaching on it when I did the Inheritance and Destiny series. Which, if you signed up for the alpha thing, you'll get that as I sent out today. It'll be linked to it. And in there, I go into this journey from slavery to sonship and the ways that slaves think as opposed to sons think. And there's quite a lot of information and quite a lot of revelation in that. Well, I encourage you to listen to that series because it challenges the mindset, and there are declarations and prayers to break some of those mindsets off. If you're then looking at, okay, where did this come in your own family line? If there was Masonic stuff in the past, Masonic stuff often associate curses, and when those Masonic oaths and things are broken, then those curses are released, and those curses can be sicknesses and poverty mentality curses on families and family lines. So there may well be a route into that, and that may well go back into that. Essentially, you can libus that type of stuff. You can also deal with it from the perspective of the environmental triggers which trigger it within our genetic makeup. And that's probably what, when you're talking about other environmental things that trigger things within our DNA, yeah, there are. Can they trigger mindsets? Absolutely. There can be things like alcoholism, poverty, which are ingrained within our DNA, waiting for triggers to actually turn those on, to switch them on in our thinking. And if you're looking back as a child and thinking that there was a situation where there was a huge trauma, and that trauma can easily switch on a genetic trigger epigenetically to promote that mindset. And you may well have had it operating because it's genetically triggered. So you can go through different levels of transformation in just forgiving, releasing ancestors. You can look to repent and renounce of it. Deal with the accusation in the court. Okay, where did this accusation come in? You stand in agreement, deal with that accusation. But if it's a genetic thing, then you need to apply the body and blood of Jesus to it, specifically targeting when you speak and apply the body of blood and you target the scriptures which talk about sonship and blessing and prosperity from the perspective of who we are as sons. So when your words mix with the revelation that's there ingrained into the DNA of God and who we are as sons, then you can produce an anointing that breaks those yokes and destroys those burdens over your life. But you have to target the mindset and target it in the opposite spirit with words and revelation that brings truth, so that then when you apply the truth of who we are in transformation at a genetic level, you can target those areas within your DNA which are sequenced to turn on a poverty mentality and break the neural pathways that are connected to that those things, because they have formed neural pathways in your mind which are connected to memories and particularly that trauma. So you need to get that trauma released, the instance of the trauma and the memories that actually linked your neural pathways to that trauma event. And so then those neural pathways can be broken open, and then when you begin to speak the truth, then they form new pathways to the memories that you're going to receive as the revelation that comes through what you say and what you're starting to believe in those things. So there's a whole process around it. You know, are there things that are environmental things that are deliberately done? I don't know, but if there are, then we have authority over them, so long as we recognize that authority. The problem is, if you think you're a slave, then you don't think you've got any authority over it. So you have to break that mentality then to exercise the authority as a son, as a co-heir in the kingdom. So I think sonship is an absolute key. And the enemy will do absolutely everything to keep us from sonship. So it's an important one that we really press through and get hold of sonship and the reality of what it actually means. You know, because that gives us the fullness of our inheritance, which is everything in Christ. You know, so I don't know if that helps a little bit. Right. Anyone else got anything?
I think I finally got my technical issues taken care of. Sorry about that. Ann and AC are joining us this morning. So you guys got any questions? I know Joe just texted me. He's on a airplane, so he couldn't join us today. So AC, Ann, you got anything?
Yeah, I've got one question, Mike.
Yep.
I know when you were here, you talked several times about you don't pray anymore. Now, Obviously, I see prayer as communication and different things, so I'd kind of like to get some clarification on, obviously, we go to prayer twice a week, so we do pray, but there's really a different form of prayer. But I know when you said that, some people said, well, we don't pray anymore. So could you kind of explain a little bit more about the prayer issue?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I say I don't pray anymore, what I mean is I don't pray as I used to pray. I don't talk to God seeing that he's somewhere else and I'm a long way away from him, and I'm praying a list of, can you do this, can you do that, you know, that type of prayer that, you know, I used to do. I mean, and it became a religious exercise. Felt like sometimes the ceiling was where my prayers were hitting. They weren't actually engaging with God. I was just praying, you know, and, you know, there were things like, you know, come boldly to the throne of grace. So I'm going to pray and God's going to hear my prayers because my prayers are coming to the throne of grace type of thing. So it doesn't mean that I'm not communicating with God. I'm communicating with God all the time. I'm just not doing it in a religious format, that I'm going to have my quiet time now, that I'm just going to now talk to God with my prayer list. I go and meet him face to face, either in the garden of my own heart, as I surrender to his presence in the first love gate. You know, I'm going around his presence in the ark. There I'm engaging in communication, but it's relationship. not a format or a structure of, well, I'm going to pray the Lord's Prayer, or I'm going to do a religious exercise, really. And so when I say I don't pray, I don't do any of those things anymore. But what I do is I talk to God face to face. I engage with Him. I share my heart with Him. He shares His heart with me. It's an intimate relationship of constant communication. And as my spirit learns to engage in the realms of the spirit, even that can be going on while I'm doing other things. So I'm praying in tongues all the time. So my spirit is a constant communication with God. As I've engaged my spirit to do that, as well as doing it with my voice and in my mind, my spirit can be praying and communicating with God and connecting with Him all the time. I just need to become more conscious of how that engagement flows so that God reveals and flows revelation to me. And that comes in many different ways. But, you know, I'm not in saying don't talk to God, the opposite. I'm saying talk to God, but talk to Him face to face in relationship. Don't do it as a religious duty or a religious exercise or in a way that puts God separate from us. So I'm praying, trying to get Him to hear my prayers. Well, I want to look in the face and actually know that He's hearing my prayers, that He's talking to me. So, yeah, I mean, that's really what I'm saying when I say I don't pray, is I don't follow the religious exercise of what I used to in terms of prayer. My relationship with God is so much more intimate that it is just communicating all the time, which means I don't have to sort of go through any, I'm going to pray this list or whatever. If I come into the presence of God, I'm open in my heart to engage with Him and to experience Him, and therefore I'm feeling His heart, He's feeling my heart, I'm sharing at a different level with Him, and I'm receiving at a different level from Him, which means it is just a relationship. So I have a prayer gate. We all have a prayer gate within our spirit where the constant flow of communication with God can take place. You know, we need to learn to open it and make sure it's flowing. And that prayer gate can connect up with various aspects in my soul. It can connect up with my conscience to direct me. It can connect up with my imagination so that I receive pictures and visions and impressions from God. It can connect up in my reason, so the thoughts of God just come into my mind. It can connect with my emotions so that I receive impressions or intuition in an emotional sense, feelings, gut instincts, all those things I would now class as prayer. But it's just a flow of communication between me and God. Is that sort of clarify it a bit?
That's good, Mike. Yeah,
great answer.
It is a good answer because, you know, you just have to be, I guess when you say it, it can kind of hit a room wrong. So I just want a little bit more explanation. That's a good explanation because it's really a constant process that we're in. It's not necessarily a single time or trying to set aside a time. It's a consistent process throughout our life and throughout our day.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, the pray without ceasing. People couldn't get their heads around praying without ceasing because, well, how can I pray without ceasing? Because when I pray, I have to stop doing what I'm doing. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have more quality time in communication, and we should. And I give plenty of time to quality time in relationship with God, but I also looking to engage with Him at every time without ceasing. So my spirit is looking to flow from that connection, and therefore He has the ability to, through my prayer gate in my spirit, to communicate with me all the time. And I just become more sensitive to that the more I learn to discern His voice rather than my voice, His thoughts rather than my thoughts, and how He communicates to me so that I can tune into that communication whichever way it works for me. And for me, it's more thoughts and knowing things. For others, it can be more visual or in that small, still voice, different ways. But it's developing a constant relationship, not something that I do sometimes in the morning and maybe sometimes at night, and then in between there's this huge cavern. Other than if there's some time I need to cry out for help, then I'll put up a quick prayer for help. And people, that's how people seem to think about it, you know. Oh, well, I need something from God now, so I'll throw up a quick prayer. Well, God knows exactly where I am in any situation, and he's able to communicate those things with me all the time. So, you know, that's really what I would see for it. Yeah.
That's good, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
It's Ann.
Oh, yeah.
Concerning corporate intercession.
Yep.
So corporate intercession now is evolving into a lot of court cases, but, you know, would that be also just praying in the spirit, you know, for a while to maybe get clarification of court cases? Or how do you see corporate intercession now with the new strategies in prayer?
I think, you know, when you come to a term like intercession, you have a lot of history. So you have history with it that essentially causes us to have problems with the word. You know, and I think that's what I've found. When you say intercession, it already creates a picture in our minds of something which has an old way of doing it. And that old way of doing it was that we were here, God's up there, we're trying to sort of connect up between something here and something there. So if we're interceding on behalf of the city or interceding on behalf of a person, somehow we're trying to stand in the middle between us and God and that person or that city or that situation. And that I believe, isn't what intercession is. Intercession is standing in the place of someone or something else so that you can use the authority you have to be able to administer into that situation with authority from the kingdom. So how I would see it is when we come together corporately, praying in tongues and just looking to tune in is great. No problem with that. We do that a lot. We do it all the time, in fact. You know, we just engage in tongues and we're looking to engage our spirit. But we then look to step in together. So we step into the realm of heaven together. And if it's a court issue, yes, we can step into that. If it's generally, okay, we're wanting to bring this situation before God for his wisdom and insight into it, then we can just go to one of the different courts. We can go before the throne of God. We can go before the ark, which is where I would encourage most people to go. So you're going into the presence of God, and then you step into the presence of God so that you can look out from the presence of God from the perspective of the lion, the ox, the eagle, and the man. And as people go in together, people will get different aspects of that perspective. So they will. Some people will see the rule of God, and we need to make declarations that change God's kingdom in this, and we're going to bring rule, and we're going to establish God. And other people are thinking, well, that's not what I saw. I saw God crying, and his heart was being poured out for that person. Well, I didn't see that. I saw this big picture that showed where this fitted into what God was doing today. You'll see all sorts of different aspects when corporately you begin to engage stepping into the presence of God and begin to look out from the four faces of God so that you can see his perspective through our different redemptive gifts and the different way we're wired up to see things. And so then you get a much fuller picture. So what I encourage is we go and do that, then we come back, we step out, and we then begin to share what is it that you saw, what is it did you feel, what aspect did you see? Oh, I saw God's, yeah, from the perspective of the ox, I actually saw that God was going to desire to do this, this, and this. So now you have a mandate that God's desire is to do that. Then you need, okay, well, how are we going to administrate that mandate? Is there anything we need to do? And so you'll begin to see we need to go and to do a court case because actually there's a hindrance or a blockage that was shown. Or we need to go and get angels assigned to that situation and release them into the atmosphere of the Earth to clear some of the atmosphere of the Earth, which is causing a blockage, or various things can happen. So for me, that's really what I see as intercession now. We go and step into God, and we begin to see things from His perspective, and then we can release that perspective and find a strategy to actually bring the kingdom, and then to administrate the kingdom in authority. And so it's not, well, we're here sort of hoping God is going to hear and do something from here. You know, and those that continue to intercede from this realm are under the atmosphere of the earth, not above it. And so you cannot administer authority under something. You have to administer above it. So then once you've got those things, you can operate in the mountains of the authority that you've been given over that sphere or in that situation, and you then can begin to see an outworking of that from a higher level of authority perspective. And I believe that those who continue to seek to intercede from here are going to run into difficulties, because God is calling us to do it a different way. And I think people have run. I mean, how many intercessors are always complaining they're getting beaten up by the enemy? You know, and they're always feeling heavy and they're always miserable. You know, I mean, it's like, I want to intercede in joy because I'm a higher level of authority over whatever it is. I'm not going to be miserable. You know, and I think there's a way in which intercession has a habit of throwing up an image of flaky people, and usually flaky women, sorry, but it's just, it has an image, which I'm not saying is true, but actually it's what people perceive, and sort of, you know, it's not the reality. The reality is we are called, yes, to intercede, to stand in a position of authority and administer the kingdom. It's a hugely powerful place to be able to stand in God and administer from God's perspective into that city or into that area or that church or that person, you know. But we've got to do it from a different dimensional perspective, I think. I mean, is that...
That was awesome. That was awesome. Thanks.
That was good.
Okay. We're going to
let Peter say something.
Okay. All right. So you got anything, Peter?
Well, I guess maybe just a continuation of what we were talking about last week. Well, I know Joe had mentioned, and I've had several other people in our group, you know, just seem like the battle heat has been turned up.
Yeah.
Like in stuff coming, you know, the enemy just really you know, just life situations, things happening around that just seem like it's more intense than what it has been. You know, do you feel like we've entered into a new season where you know, more is happening, or what would be your recommendation? You know, hunker down and just really work on you know, all the stuff that we've been working on more. You know, be more intentional and everything, or what would you say?
Well, If there is an intensified battle going on, it's an indication that the enemy is worried and trying to get you to back off and trying to get people to back off from pursuing what is the revelation that's been released. And that's always the enemy's intention, you know. God wants to set Israel free from Egypt, and so Pharaoh kills all the children, the firstborn, to stop the coming Moses, effectively. You know, Jesus is coming, so Herod kills all the children. I mean, it's a pretty intense, that's an intense battle, because the enemy knew that something was coming, so he tried to do everything he could to hinder and obstruct and intimidate and cause us to back off. And, you know, yeah, the same thing, children of Israel come up to the promised land. They go in and see all these giants and stuff, and it's like, oh, no, we can't go in, you know. So some of it is recognizing where it's coming from and knowing how to deal with it. Because part of the problem is when you get people start to testify that there are things that are struggling, that creates an environment which is negative. And so I don't ever encourage people to give negative testimonies about anything, because all it does, it creates a negative environment. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be real in one-to-one or sharing with people the things that they're going through so that they can get support or help, but publicly testifying it and sort of creates this, oh, no, we're all going through really difficult things right now, and oh, it's really hard. And even saying things like that just gives the enemy the access to occupy those words and make it even worse. So when I see these things happening, my first thing is, okay, I'm going to go and find out what's going on. So, okay, God, are you using any of these situations to transform people's lives? Will be the first thing I ask of God. Is the enemy got any access because there is sin or something that's hidden that's not been dealt with? Therefore, there's a legal access to bring things in our midst. So I'm going to go to the courts. I'm going to go and find out, is there something specific that is creating that? You know, I'm then going to look at, in these situations, is it a situation where people are looking to engage deeper and they're hitting a wall? So why is that wall there? And is that an indication that they just need to go deeper in dealing with their gateways or dealing with the living sacrifice sort of presentation stuff? Because, hey, God is showing that there's more things here to deal with, you know? And you can't make generalizations about any situation, I think. There will be some people that are going through all of those scenarios within what's going on with the people you know. And the problem is, if you generalize and say, oh, we're in a season of this, then everyone will be expecting a season of this. And it isn't a season of that, because there are different things going on with different people. You have to encourage each person to find out what's going on with them. You know, and yeah, God is going to remove stumbling blocks and deal with lawlessness. There is a sense where sometimes judgment comes to say, hey, things need changing here. But God always does it with a smile. You know, all that stuff is always out of love and out of blessing. It's not punishment. It's not God, you know, getting his own back and stuff. You know, and we have to deal with the mindsets that people have when difficult things go on, because a lot of people assume the wrong things when they're facing obstacles or problems. We know that God uses obstacles and problems to perfect us. So there is a things where there are trials and there are troubles and tribulations that we need to embrace so that we can go through them and learn to overcome the obstacles and grow. That's great. None of those include things like sickness, disease, or having no money. God doesn't use those things. The enemy tries to use those things and get us to think that the God is using those things. He doesn't use those things. But he will use issues of maybe relationship. He will use issues where there are trials and things to overcome, where things are not easy, where the doors seem to shut. And we need to, why are they shut? How do we open them? Actually, is God saying, don't go through that door? So don't keep pushing and hammering on a door that God says don't go through. So it's going back to having intimacy with God enables us to know what's going on in our lives and be sensitive to it. So, you know, my encouragement when there are things like that, yeah, okay, the enemy may well be trying to intensify the battle and put people off, but he will take advantage of the different things that are in different people's lives. And sometimes God has a bigger view, and he will even allow the enemy to do certain things because he knows in the bigger picture he is going to use that to bring transformation in someone's life. But it's one of those things that treat it all joy, brothers, when you encounter. So we have to still engage in thanksgiving, praise, an attitude of gratitude. Don't look at what isn't happening, but thank God for what is. Be positive. You know, if there's a negative environment, then people will feel negative and heavy. So let's keep our thoughts on those things that are above. Let's keep our thoughts on the good things, thank God for them, and embrace the change that takes place through overcoming. So when I talk about trials, I talk about overcoming, because that's what we have an opportunity of overcoming. So you can see everything as a negative or a positive. You know, I come as a half full sort of guy, not a half empty sort of guy. So, hey, here's an opportunity to overcome and grow, rather than, oh no, I've got to avoid this situation. So in general, you know, if you approach something with that perspective, then you're going to engage that situation with a totally different mindset towards it. Here is a stepping stone for my growth. Here's an opportunity to deal with this situation so that I'm going to grow stronger through it. My faith will increase as a result of it. I will become more mature as a result of it. Now, you know, the last 30 years, I think a lot of the church has been trying to get people out of situations by laying hands on them and praying that God will just remove situations from people, when we should have been embracing maturity and growing through it. You know, so I do a lot less trying to get people out of situations now, and a lot more trying to encourage people to recognize what the situations are and walk through the situation with them, walk alongside them, encouraging them that, yes, there is nothing that's impossible in God, and nothing can be overcome, it isn't overcomable. Now, you know, if someone is sick, well, then we need to minister healing to them. You know, that sort of stuff. If there are sicknesses and things like that that are coming about, okay, again, ask the thing, is there a reason? In 1 Corinthians 10, I think it's 1 Corinthians 10 or 11, where it talks about breaking bread, basically people were sick because they were living incorrectly and judging the body wrongly, and there were relationship issues, and they were not loving one another. That gave the enemy access to bring those things in their midst. So we have to pursue what's behind everything, you know. And in a sense, that's really what benches are three or four, to look at the overall pictures and situations and to see, okay, God, we're going to get the revelation we need to see from your perspective what's going on right now, you know, and we're going to administrate that, you know, and God will give the revelation. You know, he wants to show us where we are and what things are going on. So, you know, it's one of those things, again, where if we are asking the right questions, we will get the right answers. If we're asking the wrong questions, then we're not going to get the right answers. So let's start asking the questions which will lead to the revelation that will enable us to operate in that situation correctly. You know, and if there's things where we need to change, then we need to go and change them. You know, and if there are things we need to administrate from the realms of heaven, then we need to go and administrate it. You know, and there will be all sorts of dynamics that start flowing around, and you have to identify what those dynamics are. Is the political spirit operating? You know, is the enemy using certain things and trying to put people off? You know, you have to see some of the strategies that are in place, but you see them from above, not below. You know, and that's the key. I look down from above and see things differently than if I'm sat in it. You know, that's why let's step into that place there and get revelation there. Is that?
Yeah, that's great. That's good. Very good.
Okay.
I guess one other question I have, and then anybody else can jump in some more too, but if you are addressing a specific thing, like for instance, maybe a sickness that's in someone, whether it's yourself or you're praying for somebody else, and you're doing the court cases, you're going, you're seeing what the accusations are, and you're seeing some progress, you're seeing some, getting better. What would be the protocol to keep going after that? Would you just continually be bringing that, like on a daily basis, another court case and see if there's something more? Or would you just keep looking in, like you were just talking about, and see if there's another thing that you have to deal with? Or I guess what I'm asking, the protocol to get movement forward, to get answers to something, if it's not coming completely.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the last thing you want to do in a situation is keep looking at the problem. So we need to keep looking at the solution, which means we need to fix our eyes on the solution, which is always God. And so if it's a sickness issue, then the solution is in the nature of God and being our healer, Jesus having accomplished healing on the cross. So there's a sense where we look to and trade on the promises. And so we have to hold God to account more. You know, he's promised. You know, and if we're not seeing the results, okay, yes, we can find out if there are any root causes. I mean, that's the key in all of it. Is there a root cause? Is there iniquity? Is there genetic family issues? Is there unconfessed sin? Whatever it might be, you know, whatever the legal access the enemy has, then, you know, we have to be willing to see what those is, and that's the court cases. But there's a situation where we need to walk by faith and not by sight. So faith is the evidence or the substance of things hoped for. The hopes are the expectations that what God says is going to be outworked. And so there is usually a period between working on believing that hope so that it's actually an expectation rather than a wish, so that then we live in the period where in Mark 11, 22 to 24, having done what we've done, we have to believe that we've received it, because it says, pray believing that you've received it. And so if you keep going back trying to focus on the problem, it really is not an indication that you actually believe that you've received it, and that you are, in essence, in the attitude of your heart and in your countenance, you are living in the good of, I'm in health. Even though there's still maybe a physical symptom right now, it's not denying the symptom, but it's actually saying, I believe that God's desire for me is to live free from that symptom. I have, in a sense, traded on the word of God that says, you know, lay hands on the sick and see them recover, or, you know, 1 Peter 2:24, you know, Jesus died on the cross for our sicknesses. You know, by his stripes we are healed. Whatever the truth that you have, you know, Jehovah Rapha, the Lord my healer, you have to have truth in your heart. If it's just a wish and it's not something that you know that you know that you know, then there's more work to be done. So I would begin to focus on the solution, which is the truth. And I would continue to take that truth before God and said, this is your truth. What are you going to do about this? You know, and so I embrace the cross. So when I embrace presenting myself as a living sacrifice every day, I embrace the fact that the cross is a place of covenant exchange. I exchange any sickness for health. You know, so and I, for me, I live in health, so I exchange protection. So I live in a state of protection from sickness and from those things. But it took me 3 years to build up enough faith to know that actually that really did belong to me. And no matter what anyone said or no matter what symptom was there, it would not stop me knowing that God was my healer and healing belongs to me and it's my inheritance. even though for 3 years I still had the symptoms of things going on, and until I got to the fact, I really believed it, and then I was content. I didn't even think about it anymore, and then God just did it. The manifestation into the material world of what I had an expectation of from that spiritual reality became outworked in my life. And so, you know, for me, you know, my ear popped open, I could hear, and then I never had another attack of vertigo and the things with many other diseases that I had, you know, and that was, you know, best part of 20 years ago. So, but it took me 3 years of pretty constantly meditating, confessing. Now, I didn't know what I know now, so I don't think it would take 3 years with what I knew now, because I would know I have a higher realm of authority now, and I can go and find out things that I didn't know now then. But even then, for 3 years, I meditated on it. I began teaching it. I began to express it in my my whole thinking, my whole speech changed. I stopped negatively speaking of owning anything. It did not belong to me anymore. It wasn't my sickness. It wasn't my disease. It wasn't anything. It was not mine. It was something that had been afflicted on me and was going to be removed from me. And so that was my experience and my expectation. So do what you can do, but don't focus on the problem. That would be my thing. Because the problem will get bigger if you keep focusing on it. You know, and I think we need to do an awful lot more trading with God. In a sense, look, God, you promised this in your word. I'm holding you to your promise. Outwork your promise. Yeah, bring the manifestation of that promise. But do it with an attitude of thanksgiving, not moaning or groaning or complaining. You know, if we go before God with the attitude, and we'll know if it's in our heart, and he'll know. We can go before him, and we can present our case before him without moaning and complaining. It's just a bringing to remembrance that which he said, you know, rather than accusing him in an accusatory manner. We actually present a case to get legal jurisdiction released. In the same way, it's a legal issue, not a material one, really. So, and is that?
Yeah, that was very good, Mike. Thank you so much. Thanks.
All right. Ann has one question.
I have a burning question.
Ooh, a burning one.
A burning one. Okay, concerning what you said, a question, the first question that Peter had, concerning negative testimonies, or if you have and say you go on social media, even on, say, one of these hangouts, how do you, so that opens a door to the enemy taking now atmospheres. So address how you just go ahead and close those doors so he doesn't have that access.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is by making sure that you're not speaking from the overflow of what's in your heart. Because that's what it says, the mouth speaks from the overflow of the heart. So if people are continually saying negative things, you can say, stop saying that. But if it's in the heart, then it's going to flow out through the mouth, particularly when pressure situation comes on or difficult situations come on. And so things like social media, you know, Facebook is an absolute nightmare for people saying rubbish, negative stuff. You know, I use Facebook for posting positive things that will bless people. I never put anything personal on it, because why would I want to tell the world what I'm doing personally? You know, I don't want the world to know. And, you know, it's not just my friends, it's all the friends of my friends and all their friends that hear on their walls all the rubbish that's going on. So for me, I don't want to give the enemy any access to information that will enable him to do anything. So, you know, people put such stupid things on Facebook, you know, such negative comments. Well, and then they're surprised that things are negative. You know, so I would encourage people to stop using social media to put negative things. Use it as a positive thing all the time. Then you're not going to open yourself to a whole lot of information being released into the atmosphere or into the ether or through other people saying, oh, do you know so-and-so is just like this? I mean, they do. I mean, someone who reads their wall, someone else will be sat next to them and they'll say, oh, so-and-so is just this. Well, someone's speaking that out into the atmosphere as well. So it's not a good thing. You know, it's a huge gossip thing. And a propagation of negative things. I'm not saying that we can't use it positively, but I would certainly not encourage social media to be used in putting personal information, you know. So, you know, we can close it by, A, stopping saying negative things, stop thinking negative things, and stop letting negative things be broadcast. Now, does that mean that we live in denial? No, absolutely not. But it means that you speak to someone who's going to be able to give you support and help, and you share it from a perspective of, this is not mine, it does not belong to me, I'm not owning this, I'm just sharing what I'm going through right now because I believe that there is a way through this, a way out of it, I'm going to grow through this or whatever. And so it's the attitude that we have towards the things we're going through. You know, the children of Israel had a lot of problems because of grumbling and complaining and moaning. You know, actually the ground opened up and swallowed some of them up because they kept complaining. So our attitude in dealing with situations is really important. You know, and if we cannot come at it with a perspective of thanksgiving, you know, why did David say to his soul in Psalm 103, bless the Lord, O my soul? I guess because his soul was not in a very good blessing situation. You know, do not forget all his benefits. So often we focus on the negatives and we forget all the positives. So David had to remind himself. And that's where when we start to engage our spirit to
oh, I think we lost Mike.
Does that mean our time's up?
No, he's had issues like this before. He'll be on in a minute.
But our time is almost up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Let him finish.
Yeah, well, until he does, I just want to say one more thing. So, yeah, is that okay?
You didn't say anything.
Well, oh, so...
Here he is. He's coming in. Mike, you there? There he is.
I'm back here. So I think I covered that. I mean, is that sort of thing you were meaning, or?
Well, yes. I just wondered if we do anything in the atmosphere to close any doors. I mean, I know that we do that individually. I mean, I heard what you said, and that's really a great answer. But do you close any doors or? Do court cases concerning what you've done over the internet or done with your words of negativity so that there will be a place of cleanup, just go to the courtroom of accusation?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, if you have been saying negative things and if you've created a negative atmosphere around yourself and you've drawn negative spirits to that atmosphere, then you have to break the legal right, which is just repentance and renouncing. You know, I repent for saying that, and I renounce the attitude that came with, and now I am going to now confess the truth and start speaking the truth. So, yeah, you know, if you have done things, then remove the legal right. You know, because words are extremely powerful. And Jesus said, you know, we will have to give an account of every word. And he basically said every idle word. Because idle words are words that do not have a positive perspective to them. You know, they're useless words. You know, why would we be speaking useless words? We don't need to. So we will have to give an account of what those words created around us and in our environment. And so it's really important that we maintain a positive way of speaking about things. You know, now, you know, I know that you can get into an extreme thing with that, and it's all, no one can say anything, and everyone's fearful of saying anything. You know, it's not like that. But we need to encourage each other. When we hear each other being negative, we need to give each other permission to say, hey, that's not a very positive thing to say. You know, and picky, because often we don't even realize that we are saying negative things. You know, sometimes it can be, it's just habit. You know, and when we have to break those habits, but if it has been a habit, then we have to undo the damage that's been done. Now, it's not difficult. You know, it is a legal transaction. I said something that gave the enemy access to do something on behalf of what I said. Now I'm withdrawing what I said and removing his legal access. Now I'm going to say something positive in place of what I said negative, because now I want the positive truth rather than the negative thing that I was speaking about. You know, it isn't difficult, but you do have to clear away some things, I think.
That's good.
That's good.
That's awesome.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, perhaps we'll just leave it there.